So the year has started really with a big bang, literally so. And last year, as far as I remember, we started on 11th January 2011 with a wish and aspiration and a hope that this number signifies unity. So the whole year, in one way or the other, there was an aspiration for unity. And as if, as a reminder that we need to have a stronger basis for unity, stronger bedrock, something which is unshakable, a faith, an aspiration, a state of oneness. So the cyclone came as if as a reminder that there is a lot more to be done to prepare a base, if one may say so. The mother has long back cautioned us that it is one of those hours of God when the old bases get shaken. So literally one can see that happening. In fact, if one reads through, it's a cyclone is a very interesting phenomena. It applies at both physical and psychological levels and also the occult levels. Exactly the same process takes place. Physically, it's of course, here everybody has been talking about the occult and psychological dimension, but the physical way formation of a cyclone is very, very similar, because we face cyclones in inner life also. And unlike the physical cyclones, the psychological cyclones can last for quite some time. But the basic process and the basic method is the same. As they describe that, basically the sun and the sea conspire to form a cyclone. And the same sun which lifts the sea constantly and flows it through the winds, it so happens that as the water of the sea is lifted up, there are two kinds of currents that meet, a hot and a cold one. The winds are not blowing to disperse it. And there is as if, as it were, a cloud formation above, and the whole system, the upper layer begins to rotate in one direction and the lower layer in another direction. This is the basic genesis of a cyclone. At the center of a cyclone is what is called as calm, but this is not really a calm, it's a misnomer. It's a low pressure area. So the pressure is very low. So all the winds begin to rush, and because these winds are rotating into very different directions, they gather momentum, lot of energy is generated, energy as of few megatons of hydrogen bombs exploding. This is the kind of energy which is generated in a cyclone. And only 3% of that energy actually finds way as the cyclone flows through. Now, a very similar process happens in the inner cyclone, that the light above, it's almost one could, as I was reading about this formation of cyclone, I was reminded of actually the awakening of the Kundalini. It rises from below. There is a tremendous reservoir of energy. But as it rises, it meets a resistance. So there are two kinds of very different energies which are meeting. One which is wanting to rise up, the other which is preventing, like a cloud formation. They are two moving in very different directions, almost opposite directions. And that leads to an inner cyclone. Instead of the whole thing flowing smoothly, like the normal winds, it leads to a cyclone. And this gives us also an indication what we should do when there is a cyclone, whether outwardly or inwardly. But to that we can come a little later. Actually, if one reads through the messages of Mother and Shobindra and all that they have written on the subject, very often this is a classic example where the words of Mother and Shobindra, if not taken, keeping in account the entire panorama of phenomena about which they have written, can easily mislead us. So in one of his evening talks very early, in a context, the context is upheavals that have been predicted, and Shobindra has himself predicted as early as 1910 that there will be a lot of upheavals, both in physical nature and in the life of nations and humanity. And of course he said that time, amidst all these upheavals and revolutions, India will be free. Well, a lot of upheavals did take place. And around that period, we know that one of the worst cyclones that took place was nearly 100 years back. Nalini Das speaks about it. And when one read it, one felt we are actually celebrating, is the wrong word, but celebrating the anniversary of a cyclone. It actually took place about 100 years back, around 1912 to 1913, when Sri Aurobindo was in the old guest house and the first room, the roof collapsed. Then he moved on to the second room, the roof collapsed. And then they all moved downstairs. And as they moved downstairs, the entire staircase collapsed. And the downstairs was no better. And Sri Aurobindo and just a few handful of disciples were there. And they had to stay for a long time. Not like now, there were no food supply or water supply. But of course, there were less problems, the less needs. But it's very interesting. This cyclone came as if to destroy the seat of tapasya. That's how I look at it, that this cyclone had come to destroy the seat of tapasya, because Sri Aurobindo had chosen it, this place, as a seat of tapasya, and it attacked physically. And then Nalinda writes that after that there was another cyclone around 1920, just when the mother came permanently. And he writes very beautifully, this cyclone turned out to be a blessing, because the mother was staying in the guest house, and when there was heavy rain lashing and the roofs were collapsing, Sri Aurobindo sent word saying that the mother cannot be allowed to stay in that house any longer. And it was a blessing and a boon, because that's the time when mother moved into with Sri Aurobindo. So it was a beautiful moment, the aftermath of the cyclone. And he recounts that after that, there have been cyclones off and on, and we know messages of the mother. 58, there was a cyclone. 65, there was a cyclone. 72, there was a cyclone. But there has not been any major cyclonic event. Almost after a gap of 100 years, we had such a devastating cyclone. Otherwise, they have come, but they have not touched to that extent. Now, in evening talks, when Sri Aurobindo was asked about these cyclones, he said, the specific question was, is it because people are bad and they are doing a bad karma? Now, this is a very old theory, and this was propagated, and the mother herself discounts this theory. She says this whole idea of a sinful humanity, and she speaks about the story of the charity bazaar in Paris, where there was a fire. And when there was a fire, all the elite who were suited, booted — this is one of our illusions, that a person who is well dressed can speak very smartly and fluently — is somebody inwardly also cultured. It's one of the big illusions which with great effort, it takes a great depth of penetration to realize that how much we can be misled by this. But nevertheless, in the charity bazaar, when there was a fire, all these people who were extremely sophisticated in their speech and manners suddenly were running and outdoing each other, elbowing, leaving behind others, and all chivalry and gallantry was forgotten, and everybody was trying to be the first one to escape. And then the mother says that when many people died in the fire, and when a collective kind of convention was called, then the person read out that they had to pay for their sins. And the mother says, it is so absurd. A sinful humanity? This is not at all consistent with divine. And if there is ever such a divine, then he is not worth praying. I mean, this is very simple enough to understand, that if divine is busy punishing people because of their sins, then he is not worth praying. So when Sri Aurobindo was asked this question — by the way, Shakespeare has also written this. In Henry IV, he speaks about all these earthquakes and cyclonic events being disorders in the bowels of the earth. This is far more true than a sinful humanity. We'll see how accurate this is to mother's own revelation about this subject. Nevertheless, Sri Aurobindo says, well, cyclones, earthquakes, volcanoes have existed much before humanity came into existence. Now, this is one statement which makes clear one thing, that it's not the result of sin in human nature. This whole idea of sin is absurd. But then what to do of the mother's other statement? When there was another cyclone, she speaks of a being whom actually Pramod Kumar saw, and he has painted it. And it was a very rakshasic being, and we have in our own stories of Trinavrat, in stories of Krishna, that Trinavrat is a giant tornado. He is a being who is at the heart of a tornado, who lifts up little Krishna and carries him very far. Of course, Krishna remains safe and eventually lands safe. But the mother speaks about this being, a gigantic being, an asuric being, who is, as it were, in the center of this cyclone. And she also says that when this cyclone comes, before they come, there is a formation that comes. And this formation attacks and affects people. And many persons develop disordered stomach. They develop, I mean, we are just read today, there was a case report that there is an outbreak of diarrheas and people look for causes. I mean, a lot of people came recently and they were unfortunately blaming it on dining room food, whereas the dining room was the only department which worked so beautifully on that day. So thanks to them, we had food supply throughout the day. But they felt that it's because of the food we are eating. But the mother reveals that no, it's a formation, and this formation hits people and breaches through the subtle physical envelope, and it can affect people in various ways. One of the results is diarrheas and etc. Simply because this is a very vulnerable part of human being. So this is the second truth she reveals. On one side, it has nothing to do with human beings. On the other side, there are beings inside and human beings are affected by it. At third level, when 65 cyclone came back, she gave a very powerful message. And this message brings it to yet another level. She says that behind all destructions, the big destructions of nature, earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, cyclones, floods, etc., or the human destructions, wars, revolutions, riots, there is always Kali's power. And upon earth, Kali works for the hastening of the terrestrial progress. Now she is revealing a yet another dimension, that it's not even the Asuric being, but behind it, there is Kali's power. So how are we to reconcile these three? Actually, it's very simple. Sri Aurobindo reveals us a truth, which also the mother has said the same thing, that it's not because of sin, first of all. Second thing is, Sri Aurobindo speaks of the cyclone as phenomena which have been existing in nature with beings and forces behind it, and we should not blame poor humanity to be the cause of these cyclones and floods. At third level, the mother reveals that how these affect the human system, and at a fourth level she reveals that behind all this there is a spiritual power at play and it comes to hasten the terrestrial progress. Now when mother gave this message, it was misunderstood, like many of mother's messages, and the person to whom the message was given, he went around and saying, we must welcome it, we must want more and more cyclones because this is how we will be purified. So the mother says, as always my messages are misunderstood. And she says, I am not saying that you should ask for cyclones and Kali. You should rather ask for grace and love because they are a greater truth. Kali's truth is only one of the truths. She comes to hasten the progress. What we have to do is to learn the lesson. Not that Kali come and hit us a blow. So she says something very interesting after that. In all cases, the extent of the damage gives the measure of the imperfection. It is not sin. Sin is a very distorted conception of something much deeper. The mother speaks of resistances in material nature and human nature. And here she says that in all cases the extent of the damage gives the measure of the imperfection and must be taken as a lesson for indispensable progress. Now something very similar happened long back. We had recently the almost after long time there was this service tree which was affected. And when this happened long back in 72 cyclone, the service tree was again affected, some of its branches almost in the center. So the mother has, look how she looks at the imperfections of human nature which have to be worked upon, and how the extent of the damage reveals the measure of the imperfection. Just as a physical illness or disorder reveals the measure of the imperfection within our own psychological being. So this is a message on December 6, 1972. There is something even more powerful she gave on that was the next day. So December 6, on the night of the 5th, a violent cyclone struck Pondicherry and the service tree was affected by that. There were broken branches. So the mother says, there was also the transformation tree which was affected. So she says first about the transformation tree. The tree that gave me all my transformation flowers is broken. The service tree also, some of its branches have been torn off. Just some of the branches were torn off. Usually it didn't come this way. That cyclones have come, but they don't come this way. And then she says something very revealing. The consciousness must have sunk a lot, quite a lot. That explains the depression at the center of the cyclone. We spoke about the little depression at the center of a cyclone. So one can see that in the center of our own being, there is the psychic flame, the psychic aspiration. And when there is a depression there, the flame comes low. We step out somewhere of the protection and are hit, a cyclone is formed. So this depression at the center is not a calm, but a depression within our own psychological being. The forces of unity, the forces of harmony, the forces of love and everything else, they are affected and there is a cyclone. On 7th December, the next day, she gave an even more powerful message. Something which is very revealing. It came today just by chance. I had not thought that this is the first time I have also read this message. So I had to go back and check whether it's an original message or somebody had just played a hoax. Though it's in mother's own handwriting. So there is no way it can be doubted. But whether she came post-cyclone, then yes, 7th December 72. 5th December the cyclone had struck. And the message is, it is a warning that the nature is giving. That those who do not have that true spirit of Auroville, there was a devastation in Auroville at that point of time. So she is saying it in context of Auroville, but I guess it applies everywhere. It is a warning that the nature is giving, that those who do not have that true spirit of Auroville will have to change or to go if they do not want to change. This is a very powerful message. Just around the time when she also reveals men, countries, continents, the choice is imperative. Truth or the abyss. So all these three statements, revelations, there are many others. One can often pit one against the other. That it's not Kali, it is mother has said there is an adverse being. It's not adverse being, it is a material forces of nature. But actually all the three are beautifully reconciled. Even before man, these forces have been working upon nature to need it. In Indian mythology, there is the story of Balram as the elder brother and Krishna comes later. So Balram is the Haldhar, we all know he carries the plough and he ploughs the earth. And after he ploughs the earth, it is ready for the dance of Krishna. So it's a very beautiful analogy. So the earth has been ploughed by these forces. Shobindu speaks of that in Savitri. And how it had, some of these events had beautiful effects. One such event was of a great magnitude when the Indian continent, now we call it as the subcontinent, but India tore off from Africa and Atlantis. This is millions of years back when Africa and Atlantis were together and India was together. And probably the memories of that age still linger in the mind of the Indian race. The deluge and Rishi of the Pole, Shobindu has written a poem on that. And when it tore off, it traveled thousands of miles over God knows how many years. And when it crashed into Asia, the Himalayas came up. So Himalayas are literally when the ocean rose up to the surface and climbed up. So all that was hidden inside the ocean depths came up and became the Himalaya. Perhaps this whole process is occultly described in the churning of the great ocean with Meru and lot of things coming up, herbs and beautiful things and poisonous things coming up in the result. So that was a great event. Then mother also says that whatever is true during this destruction, nothing can happen to it. Only that which is imperfect, that gets destroyed. So this also she says. And there is a very interesting story, not story, a real event of one of the great eruptions. It was a volcano on which a whole island was located. And this was a very developed island. And if I am not mistaken, the people were called Minoans. So they were not exactly mainland Greece, but very developed people who had lot of access to technology and very developed. On the other hand, there was mainland Greece, which was not so developed. People were mostly artisans and farmers who did not know much about the kind of highly developed technology. And while the people were basking one day, suddenly in the hot springs, the whole island imploded. Something similar happened also in the 72 cyclone when a whole island was gulped. Mother has described it as blob. It went under water. It was destroyed. So something similar happened. This is almost, if I am not mistaken, it is somewhere around the birth of Christ. Almost again reveals that when great descents take place, there is a problem. So this whole island was destroyed. But few people escaped. Now the beauty of this escapade was that they went to the mainland and they communicated that knowledge over a period of time, and that gave birth to the Mycenaean civilization, which was a very cultured and developed one. Later on, Greece associates itself with that civilization. But the original thing was completely destroyed. So she says, whatever is true and beautiful will be preserved. But whatever is not rooted in truth, that will be destroyed. So all these thoughts she brings out in a very revealing passage. Someone has asked again, Mother, that someone has said that catastrophes and disasters of nature, earthquakes and deluge and the sinking of continents are the consequence of a discordant and sinful humanity. And with the progress and development of the human race, a corresponding change will come about in physical nature. How far this is true? Now the mother says exactly what Sri Aurobindo has said. There is no contradiction in the two. While she insists about the Kali force, she is not speaking of sin but imperfections, which is a very different thing. So she says, perhaps the truth is rather that it is one and the same movement of consciousness that expresses itself in a nature ridden with calamities and catastrophes and in a disharmonious humanity. So there are forces of order and forces of disorder which are constantly at work. In physical nature, we see it. The scientists know it very well. Same thing applies in the field of biological nature, in vital nature. There is a forces of disorder, forces of order and harmony. Same thing applies in human nature. The forces of disorder and forces of order and harmony. And when the two meet together, it creates a cyclonic effect. So she is speaking of that. The two things are not cause and effect, but stand on the same level. Above them, there is a consciousness which is seeking for manifestation and embodiment upon earth. And in its descent towards matter, it meets everywhere the same resistance in man and in physical nature. Is there any evidence to it? Well, I was reading a book on marvels of nature, and it describes some of these beautiful very interesting book about many phenomena that take place in nature. And it says that it's strange that the amount of cyclones and natural disasters which have taken place in the previous century, of course the book was written somewhere in the late 80s, so it speaks about this century, have been much more than what has taken place through billions of years. So it is actually very concrete evidence that actually in the previous century there have been many more cataclysmic natural disasters, though they have taken place throughout the history. But they have been much great during just the previous centuries. And the mother is revealing that the resistances of nature, both material as well as psychological, they rise up and create a problem. And very interestingly, at one place the mother says, you know, my child, you think that nature feels and thinks like us. For nature, it's too vast. And humanity is like ants and your houses are like anthills. Now, the interesting part of this whole thing which mother speaks, and of course the great sage Guru Nanak has spoken about it long back. I think I spoke of this story here. But leaving that aside, mother says nature moves across its way. It doesn't bother. Maybe a heart is broken. Maybe a civilization is lost. It moves upon its path. And for it, we are like reeds. Unless we have rooted in some deep truth and have realized that perfection. Now, in Tokyo, when a whole... this again took place around the time when mother was there. When a whole island had again vanished in one of these eruptions followed by tsunami and hurricanes. And Tokyo was almost devastated. Then the newspaper reported something very interesting. The newspaper said it looked as if a child had kicked at an anthill and scattered it into pieces. By some stroke of intuition, the person spoke exactly in a language which the mystic speaks. So she's saying that it meets with resistance. All the disorder and disharmony that we see upon earth is the result of this resistance. So we see on one side one layer and the other side other layer. And the two meet and they are moving in opposite directions. Exactly how a cyclone is formed. Calamity and catastrophe, conflict and violence, obscurity and ignorance, All ills come from the same source. Man is not the cause of external nature, nor external nature the cause of man. But both depend on the same one thing that is behind them and greater. And both are part of a perpetual and progressive movement of the material world to express it. So this is the essential thing, that there are forces which conspire, who there is a great consciousness that comes, and as it presses down, different points react differently. Some open beautifully and progress. Some resist, some grate, some sink down because they are afraid of too much of light. And depending on the sum total of this, the collectivity and the collective events take place, both in human consciousness as well as in material nature. So what is to be done? Actually, on the day of the cyclone, I was in Orissa, and a lot of people advised me not to take a flight, including from Pondicherry. It was the 30th morning, and it was a rude shock, in the sense, desperately one wanted to come back to Pondicherry. And I was just praying that the flight should not get cancelled. So against all sane advice or insane advice, I took the flight. And that same afternoon, landed in Chennai, doubled the price, and the taxi fellow finally agreed. He fleeced me to the core because anyways, he brought me to Pondicherry through that whole thing going on. Now, what is to be done? That time, I was just thinking what should be done. Like, you know, one is helpless. Of course, one is behind the, inside the door, inside the room. So what should one do inside the room? And the thing that came to mind was that one should pray to the sun. Now, there was no way I could communicate it. There was no phone lines working. Basically, the principle is that whatever is resisting, it should break through the clouds and lift it up. This was the logic which was operating. A very, very human logic, but based on something which was occult. So one should pray to the sun, aspire to the sun. And perhaps the same thing applies at a psychological and occult level. There is a poem of Sri Aurobindo where he speaks about the Vedantin's prayer, where he says, how come I am caught up in this net of sin and evil and tormented by lust and greed and grief, etc. Where is my sunlit path? Part. And then he finally says, it ends with that, O hidden sun of knowledge, open, love, outpour. So, you know, he's literally asking for that outpouring of light and love. And the mother says something very similar. And this is the work to be done. Now, if there is awakened somewhere upon earth a receptivity and openness sufficient to bring down in its purity something of the divine consciousness, this descent and manifestation in matter can change not only the inner life, again she gives the correspondence, but the material conditions also. In one of the writings of Nalinda long back, and this is based on Mother's talk, he says, man can and must become the master of external circumstances purely by inner means. He has the power inside. He has the capacity inside that by awakening in him something true, something vast, something powerful, he can stop even material cataclysm. And we know Mother has so many times, even few years back, we all experienced the giant tsunami where there was devastation all around, but Ashram and Auroville were almost saved. So this was an example that how, I think it was 6 years back, how, in fact, she says a collective prayer can change the fixed course of things. So why not the cyclone? So this descent does not depend for its possibility upon the condition of humanity as a whole. If we had to wait for the mass of humanity to reach a state of harmony, unity and aspiration strong enough to bring down the light, then there would be no hope. So she says, if we are not expecting everybody to do this, but there is a possibility that an individual or a small group or limited number may achieve the consciousness entering into the consciousness of the earth. No, may achieve the descent. It is not quantity or extension that matters. One drop of the divine consciousness entering into the consciousness of the earth could change everything here. It is the mystery of the contact and fusion of the higher and the lower. And as I was reading this, this was the thought and aspiration that let these Tuesday and Wednesday classes become like that, like a yagna, not a class, but a yagna where we all aspire collectively for this change, to bring that peace and harmony and light in this troubled atmosphere of the earth. She says it's not necessary that there should be a large group. It doesn't matter. Just a small section of humanity, if it aspires, it's possible. And how to aspire, she shows us the way again. And with that we will stop. Just three prayers of the mother. We are starting the Tuesday classes. And it's only appropriate that we start or end with a prayer. August 21st, 1914. What we should do when there are upheavals. O Lord, Lord, the whole earth is in an upheaval. It groans and suffers. It is in agony. As we see from the date, it is the coming of the First World War. It's around that time. All this suffering that has descended upon it must not be in vain. Human lives are lost. So much consciousness is lost. Work is lost. So she is saying, may not this be in vain. Grant that all this bloodshed may produce a swifter germination of the seeds of beauty and light and love, which must blossom and cover the earth with their rich harvest. One is reminded, Sri Aurobindo in Essays on the Gita says, yes, peace there must be upon earth, but right now it is Rudra who holds the earth in the hollow of his hands. Rudra, as we know, the godhead Poseidon, is the power behind all these cataclysms. He is the masculine side of Kali, the other side of Shiva. Shiva the benevolent and Shiva who can be destructive. So he says that the heart of man must first deserve peace. The debt to the Rudra must be paid before peace can be there lasting upon earth. So she is saying that may all this blood that has gone into the earth, may it serve as a seed, may it serve to hasten germinating the seed of light and beauty and love. Out of the depths of this abysm of darkness, the whole being of the earth cries to thee that thou mayest give it air and light. It is stifling. Will thou not come to its aid? O Lord, what must we do to triumph? So what is to be done to triumph? She gives a very beautiful, simple remedy. Hear us, for we must conquer at any price. Break down every resistance appear. So it is the resistances of material nature, inner nature, which come in the way of the divine descent. And then August 31st, 1914. In this formidable disorder and terrible destruction, can be seen a great working, a necessary toil preparing the earth for a new sowing. Sri Aurobindo in one of his aphorisms says, the greater the destruction, the greater the possibility of a new creation. So if there is a great destruction, it shows that there is something still more beautiful which is waiting for us. Preparing the earth for a new sowing, which will rise in marvelous spikes of grain and give to the world the shining harvest of a new race. The vision is clear and precise. The plan of thy divine law so plainly traced that peace has come back and installed itself in the hearts of the workers. There are no more doubts and hesitations, no longer any anguish or impatience. So we have to take care of that. Patiently, hearts free of anguish, full of trust and hope, we keep aspiring. And at the end, beautiful prayer. Peace, peace in all the world. War is an appearance. Turmoil is an illusion. Peace is there. Immutable peace. Mother, sweet mother who I am, thou art at once the destroyer and the builder.